And welcome back to the Sundance Reel. Again, Leslie Thatcher and Barb Brett's here along with our next guest, Boy State, our summer leadership and citizen program sponsored by the American Leadership. Boys, there's also a girl program, are usually nominated by their high school during their junior year. The film Boy State, one of the films in this year's U.S. documentary category, focuses on Boy State in Texas. In the studio, I'll talk a little bit more about their film. I have the husband and wife team of Boy State, directors Jesse Moss and Amanda Bain. Good morning.
Good morning.
Glad to be here.
Yeah. So why was this something you guys were interested in making a film about? I mean, did you participate in Boys or Girls State, or did you know somebody who did? Or
I didn't participate in the program. I didn't really even know about it growing up. But I think two things happened. One is I read an article in the Washington Post about the Texas Boys State program. The boys, after the election of Donald Trump, that year had voted to secede from the United States. This was in their mock government program. And this caught the attention of the Texas media and then the national media. And I read that story and I thought, wow, that's a really interesting kind of canary in the coal mine. Like, is that what's happening in our country? And the second thing is, I think we were struggling to understand the polarization that we're experiencing and how difficult it seems to be for people of different political views to talk to each other.
Yeah, I mean, there's so few spaces where people come together from this end of the political spectrum, from this end, have a conversation face-to-face, and this was one of those spaces.
Okay, well, I'm not familiar with the story, so I get my sense is, though, is that Texas is a very conservative state and would have been Trump supporters, and yet they succeed from the country because...
Well, what's interesting about Texas is I think it's a bellwether of the country. It's actually a purple state. It's neither red nor blue, and it's actually probably trending blue, but it's not quite there yet. But there's a strong conservative Texas streak, which we know, but there's also the newer Texas, an immigrant Texas, a Texas that's more liberal and progressive. And these two forces were coming together in this program in which boys and girls, there are separate programs for boys and girls, but in this case, the boys, 1,000, come together and build a representative democracy from the ground up. And that was what was interesting to us, is this elaborate simulation of government and how the boys would kind of come together and would they find compromise or, as we read about, would they dissolve the union? And we were sort of hopeful that there would be a lesson in our larger democracy in what they would experience when we went and made the film.
And was there a parallel? Or is that a spoiler?
That's
a spoiler.
It's a little. I mean, I think there's a little bit of everything. A little high, a little low, a little hopeful, a little, yeah.
So from your documentation, I mean, if the goal of the program is to create good Americans, more educated about government, do you think they're meeting that goal?
Absolutely. I think that the learn by doing process of having all of these kids come together and understand the way that the government works and how elections work. I like Jesse said, I didn't know about this program when I was younger, and I sure wish I did. Because I think it's in that learn by doing way, they understand what decisions get made, you know, during elections, during legislation. I mean, all the, you know, I think that's really.
And I think one thing we all realize is that we can't take democracy for granted.
Yeah.
Now, the institutions that protect and preserve our democracy are under assault, have been, and democracy is not a spectator sport. And what this, I think this experience, this film, this program shows us is that you have to get involved and you have to learn how the system works so that you have a voice. And watching kids who are coming of age politically sort of come to understand that, to see that they have, and we see now kids who are 17 have very strong moral voices in our political debates. They have real power. And so for us to spend time with kids, and they're here at Sundance this weekend, we have 4 boys in the film who we've found out of 1,000 who are extraordinary, and to see them kind of learn what this process and experience is like.
And what made those 4 stand out from so many others?
We were looking for kids who were simultaneously sophisticated politically and intellectually. I mean, these are extraordinarily smart kids, but also we wanted them to be vulnerable enough to be open to change and to conversation and to feeling and to all the things that a good film character should be too. And we wanted them also to be as different from one another as we could. We really wanted to represent this side, different backgrounds, different areas of Texas. So,
and do they do a good job with the program of providing diversity? Because I would imagine in the beginning, perhaps they didn't in the beginning of the program. And I'm sure that is something that has evolved.
The program is 70 plus years old.
I think 1935
is
a start date.
They are transitioning and moving into the 20th. What century are we in?
I think that they're like Texas. They're changing and coming to. They want to reflect Texas today, not Texas of the 20th century, Texas of the 1950s. And so we see there. I mean, there's a wonderful tradition to the program, but there's a part of that tradition which is maybe more conservative, and I think that's evolving and changing. And so we have boys. We have one in the studio today with us who is has a Ronald Reagan doll on his bookshelf, and then we have a young man who was a Bernie supporter. And so we love that they're very different, and they reflect the new Texas.
Yeah, so the structure of the film, though, I mean, because you came in after you had heard about the vote, about seceding from the Union, so that you followed up with the kids that were part of that group, or you came in and did a new program, you know, with...
Every year is a completely new crop of kids. Mm-hmm. So this group, we didn't know what was going to happen. We didn't know what the big vote that year was going to be or who would rise to the top. We had no idea about anything. So it was a lot of a leap of faith that something interesting would go on.
Did you have the opportunity to meet and interview any of the boys before they participated, or was it just after?
The program is so compressed, it's just a week, very intense. Mm-hmm. We knew that we would have to identify some boys before it started. And so we spent weeks and weeks and weeks traveling across Texas, meeting boys who were interviewing for the program and going to their homes. And
how far ahead of time was that? Like
3 months.
Okay.
And
I talked to 100 boys over the phone, too, before we even met some in person. But, you know, when you do meet the person that is going to be in your film, I think it's kind
you
of a right away moment. Yeah. I think with each of the four that we ended up following, it was an instantaneous.
Well, you fall in love.
Yeah, you do. It is a little bit like that.
It's like really a deep relationship.
And then in terms of accessing the camp itself, you were given access then to kind of follow them around at camp?
The organization was open to taking our phone call when we first made that call, which I think is really a testament to how much they love their program. And I think that sort of the press that they had gotten about the secession, I think they were interested in exploring. I was impressed that they took our phone call, let's put it that way. And then we had a lot of conversations. They watched our previous films, and we talked about the approach we wanted to take, which was immersive, and they loved that. And eventually, they were very helpful in helping us, like, sort of navigate 1,100 boys.
We were very nervous when we showed them the rough cut of the film. We flew to Austin, and we rented a movie theater, and we had them all come. And when they started to laugh, I knew that
we
had
be
them.
Okay.
And they really loved the film.
All right. So they maybe have saw it as some kind of public service announcement then for the program as well.
Huh? I mean, I think they believe in the values of the program, civil discourse, and learn by doing, and representative democracy, and helping young people learn how our government works. And we share those convictions. And I think that the film does that, but in a way that's a little bit irreverent. It's funny. It's deeply moving. It's shocking sometimes. And I think that they appreciate that, because that's what they know. That's what the program is.
Yeah.
They do it every year. And so I think they feel like we made an honest film.
Yeah, they love their program. They wanted it to just be seen for what it is.
Yeah, and why did you decide to choose the boys' program as opposed to the girls' state?
I think because the boys were the ones that chose to secede, we were interested in following up with them. I think there's a great film to be made about Girl State.
Yeah, we'd like to make that. And also People State. And I think whether in the future the programs integrate, that would be actually one of the boys in the film comments on that. And I think that could be part of the trend. We'll see. But I think just watching young people learn about these responsibilities and connect with each other who have different political views with young women, with young men, with young men and young women together is fascinating.
It's very hopeful to see how engaged the engaged kids can be.
And what do you think accounts for that? I mean, when I was 17, I cannot say I was politically aware in the least. That could be a reflection of just where I grew up in small town Indiana. Do you think that today's youth are more aware than I was, than you were, or what do you think accounts for that?
Well, I think they're and we have a teenage daughter, and so we're watching her be politicized. And I think that they're dealing with an existential threat with climate change, with gun violence in schools. We dealt with other issues, the threat of nuclear war, mm-hmm. but I feel like those immediate threats have politicized them. And also they're not orthodox in their views. I think we discovered in Texas an acceptance of views of others that were not what we expected. And there's, I think, a flexibility and an openness in certain social and cultural identities mm-hmm. that it feels refreshing. There's still differences, but I think the film shows some hopefulness.
I'm also curious. We know why you were attracted to the film because of what happened in the program the year before. Is that incident mentioned at all in this documentary? I mean, that is really a magnet for interest, I think.
Very much. The shadow of that vote, the controversy of that vote and what it stands for, it looms over the events that we film and influences them and determines the outcome in really provocative and interesting ways. So, and we know, for the country as a whole, that divisiveness has not subsided. It's only increased.
Worse, yeah.
And I think that they're like a very sensitive instrument in how they how they experience what the country's experiencing. And that's why we were drawn there. And I think that's what we saw continue to play out in ways that hopefully audiences will be talking about, because the outcome was very unexpected.
And that's what gives me hope, to know that there are especially young people who are aware and active about the future.
Yeah, definitely.
Thousand. Every year. So,
yeah. Well, not all of them were so
impassioned.
Some of them just wanted to hang out, but a good portion were deeply.
That's fair.
Where do they hang out? I mean, where is the American Legion has some kind of campground?
University of Texas campus.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Like in the dorms.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Cool. All right, so let's see. It looks like your premiere is happening tomorrow morning.
Tonight.
Oh, tonight. I'm sorry. I don't have that on my schedule here.
6 p.m. tonight at the library.
At the library?
Yeah.
Okay.
And then tomorrow at Temple at 9 a.m.
9 a.m. Okay. Also be next Thursday at Redstone, and then again at the Mark next Friday. Anything else you wanted to mention about the film?
Well, the boys are here too, which is incredible, and they're going to be part of the conversation. We're looking forward to sharing the film with an audience with them there.
And I just want to mention, we did say they were husband and wife team, but they seem to be getting along great. So it was all a success.
All right. Jesse Moss, Amanda McDane, thanks so much for your time.
Thanks.
Thanks so much.
You're listening to the Sundance Reel here on KPCW. It's 9:35.
This legislative report on KPCW is made possible in part by the law firm of Hogan Lee Hutchinson at hlhparkcity.com.
It's 9:36 now, and welcome to the Sundance Reel. I'm Leslie Thatcher, along with Barb Bretz. Well, it's commonplace in large metropolitan areas using helicopters to cover the news. Here in Utah, only one of our major news organizations actually owns and operates a helicopter. But Whirlybird is a film in the U.S. documentary category made by Matt Yoka. He has a master's degree from USC's Annenberg School of Journalism. He joins us now in the studio. Thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you.
So, a degree in journalism. Did you ever, before becoming a filmmaker, get out and report?
Good question. You know, what's funny is I did that journalism program with the intention of making this documentary film and studying Los Angeles. And so I never was a breaking news reporter. I never went to unfolding events. So... No, I mostly make stories about people that do that work.
Okay, so is your bachelor's then in film studies or?
It's in media studies. Okay. Yeah, I went to the University of San Francisco and I was a media studies major and kind of took almost an outside look at media. And then that's where I got interested in documentary. And so I found the medium to be have endless possibilities. So yeah, it drew me in.
Yeah. So born and raised in California, Southern California?
Los Angeles, yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So you were then kind of the guy before making this film that worked behind the camera. Mm-hmm. And in a real kind of news job, you worked for HBO's Vice News?
Right, yeah. So I got my start at, I would say, I began my career at Vice Media, and it was just as they were starting to do video. They were transitioning from being a print publication into making documentaries, and I thought that they were just doing all this wild, amazing, immersive journalism, and so I wanted to get involved, and so I started working there, and I worked on a ton of different projects for them. Yeah.
Okay.
Well, what I loved about this film, there are actually a couple of very distinct storylines in here. And before we focus on Bob and who Bob was, I really want to comment on, I loved all the vintage footage and how this really is a trip back through time at a lot of events that happened in our society and the important role that those helicopter breaking news guys played. But did you have any trouble getting a hold of all those events? And
well, I should say that the vast majority of the archive you see in Whirlybird is from Zoe and Marika's archive.
Their own personal archive.
Okay. Yeah. So, and I tried to, that was intentional because I wanted the audience to experience their story as they personally went through it. And so I stayed really committed to using their material. Of course, there was plenty of material to use, so it wasn't difficult, I would say, to, there was more than enough to work with there.
And you did a great job because more than once, the phrase "along for the ride" was part of the interview or part of what somebody said. Mm-hmm. And I was nervous for those children when they got drug along on these car chases before the helicopter chases. So you did a great job of engaging the audience, I think.
I wanted to take everybody along for the ride.
You
for
did.
Sure.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, you have a trailer that's kind of filmed in that storage unit. So talk to me just a little bit about how you found, again, Marika and Zoe. And again, back in the day, Zoe was known as Bob.
Right,
I mean,
yes.
They were a husband news team. I mean,
they
spent
were a married
a lot of time
couple. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So they were a married couple, and they started their life together as covering news stories in Los Angeles. So
when they were very young, what, college age or right out of college?
Right out of college. In fact, I don't believe Zoe actually went to college. She was kind of just a go-getter. She had too much to do, I think, to go to college. So she was already kind of on the streets exploring the city and met Marika. And that's sort of when we describe that first scene when they are traveling around downtown Los Angeles, Skid Row, looking at murder scenes. We describe that scene as their first date. That's the first date. So
she knew what she was in for.
I think that they both had a fascination of the city and that they sort of fed off the adrenaline that you got from covering stories. And the way in which that I got into their story was trying to tell a Los Angeles story. And so I began searching for different subjects that could give me access points into the city. And I started thinking about high-speed pursuits, which is kind of an LA phenomenon, you know, plenty of geography to explore.
Well, and the famous O.J. Simpson Bronco footage.
The culmination of it all, yeah, which was also shot by Zoe and Marika. So when I found out who Zoe was, I got in touch with her, and we had a conversation about wanting to make the movie, and I immediately found her to be fascinating and in a lot of ways very eager to talk about her life and her experiences and reflecting on who she was. And she then introduced me to Marika. And Marika, I found to actually be doing the same thing, reflecting on who she is and who she was. And it was Marika that then took me into the storage unit that they had, which it was just a public storage unit in Los Angeles. I mean, a totally anonymous, nondescript building. And inside one of those units is probably the greatest personal archive of Los Angeles that exists. As far, I mean, I made the documentary about it, so I'm a little biased, but I think that's, I believe that to be the case. And they were just, almost all of them were not digitized, sitting in beta tapes, three-quarter inch tapes. I don't know if remember those.
Back, yeah,
I didn't know what, I'll say I didn't know what they were when I first looked at them.
Go ahead,
they
look make like, us feel
I'm
old,
sorry.
Matt.
I mean, but as somebody who enjoys, throwback ephemera, I was really drawn to them. I mean, they're these bulky VHS-looking tapes. So,
are they being preserved, or have they been preserved?
I am proud to say that we've digitized their entire archive.
Wow,
so that
that's amazing in itself.
3,000 tapes we digitized, and that amounts to about 2,000 hours of Los Angeles history. And so I always say when I was scared how the movie was going to turn out, I at least knew that I was preserving some of LA. So
the videotape, that's a treasure. Yeah.
The videotape is just so particular. I mean, was it in a climate controlled storage unit?
Well, I guess it was climate controlled, but beyond that, it was nothing special. I mean, I imagine right next door to their archive could have been, you know, somebody's old clothes and furniture. So there's nothing particularly safe about it.
Right. Yeah. I mean, did you have problems with that though? I mean, tape breaking and things like that. Yeah.
Well, the digitization process was this is hyper nerdy stuff. I don't know if everybody wants to go, you know, you're talking about
nutshell version.
Yeah. Well, I mean, so we had to bring out 3/4 inch beta and beta decks, and we hooked that up to computers and just plugged in one, hit play, and recorded it to digital version. And sometimes the tapes would break, and you'd have to go through.
Oh, yeah, because we have still 8-track tapes in our storage unit.
Oh, see, I want to hear that.
And we can't even, we have some good stuff that we save, but we can't even play it because we can't find the machines to do it. But
maybe we should talk about that for my next project. So become my forte now.
In your interviews, you say even though Marika was kind of an adrenaline junkie as well, she seems so grounded and so calm in the interviews as compared to Zoe, who is a little more agitated, a little more hyped up about things. Is she a grounded, calm person?
The answer is yes. I think that both of them I found both of them to be incredible storytellers and great storytellers in actually kind of two different ways.
Mm-hmm.
And Zoe is, I mean, you know, if you see her at a party, she's the one you want to talk to. She's got endless stories, and she's so animated and just really kind of feels a lot of her memories. And so I think that she was great to take us into the emotional experience and the visceral experience. And I think that Marika, in the same way, and probably what also worked in their relationship, was kind of a yin and a yang. Mm-hmm. And so I think she, in some ways, was a little bit more of the kind of grounded person. And it was, I think, that balance that helped them succeed and cover the biggest stories that happened in the country during that period. So, yeah.
Do you think the whole process of making this doc for them was therapeutic for one or for both of them?
I like to think so. It's probably a question best answered
by them.
For them. But I did feel like it created the opportunity for a lot of reflection, and sometimes that was difficult, sometimes it was a lot of fun, and I hope that in the film the audience kind of goes on that journey with them.
Along for the ride.
Right on.
So is this something, as a news junkie, I'm just going to love, because I'm going to love hearing about all those old news stories that I remember Hal Fishman reporting on?
Hal Fishman, yeah, he's a classic. I'd like to think that the film offers a lot of different things that could appeal to people's interests. If you are interested in media, interested in how media has evolved, or if you want to look at it in a more critical way, how it de-evolved maybe, I think you could find their work to be particularly fascinating. I think it's a really important story in the bigger picture of media. But I also think for people who are just trying to make it through life, trying to succeed in the work that they do, try to build a family and maintain relationships, I think that there's a lot that this film offers that you could also reflect on. And so as incredible as the story is, I like to think that there's actually a lot that's relatable that goes on in the story.
Okay. The film premieres
Sunday, 2:30 p.m.
At the Mark.
At the Mark. Here we go.
All right. Exciting. Anybody's picked it up, or what have you got going?
Oh, gosh, I don't know. Yet. I just was told to show up here for the radio show.
So. Well, enjoy the rest of the festival.
Thank you so much.
Enjoy the premiere.
I really appreciate coming on the show with you guys, so thanks for having me.
All right. Come back again.
Thank you.
Matt Yoka, thanks for your time. You're listening to the Sundance Reel here on KPCW.